We're on Kufnun Gimel Amid Aleph, five lines down, the last word on the line where it says Hahi then Matanta. We've been learning about Matnas Shchiv Meira, the gift of a very ill person. More specifically, for a person who is very ill, gifts away his property in a way that it's clear he's only doing so because he expects to die. And the halacha is, even if he didn't make any actual stipulation, there's an automatic assumption that the gift is only given on condition that indeed the ill person succumbs to his illness and dies. Should he recover, and the whole thing is off, the gift is null and void. And furthermore, we learned daitiki mevateles daitiki, meaning that when the gift gets the status of a matnas shchiv meira, the halacha is the benefactor could change his mind. He could say, you know what, I originally said I was going to gift everything to Reuven, I'm going to gift it to Shimon instead. The Gemara today begins with a case where the gift of a seriously ill person contained an ambiguous language. The Gemara relates, "Ahi matanta dahave kasuv ba b'chayim uvamaves." In this particular gift document, the person was seriously ill at the time, but had this ambiguous language that said, "This gift shall be a gift in life and in death." And the Rishbam says, a conventional kinyan was performed, like picking up a kerchief. The performance of a conventional kinyan would be evidence to support the theory that this is a regular matnas bari, it's a regular gift of a healthy person. That is, that this person intends to give this gift unconditionally, it's not specifically if he dies from his illness. But on the other hand, we have this language of b'chayim uvamaves. So what is the halacha here? The Gemara tells us it's a dispute between Rav and Shmuel. Rav Amar, Rav says, "Arehi ki matnas shchiv meira." Rav understands that this gift is a gift of a shchiv meira, and so it's only a gift if the benefactor dies from his illness and he is able to retract. If he changes his mind, he may do so, because it's matnas shchiv meira. Shmuel Amar, but Shmuel says, "No, arehi ki matnas bari." Shmuel says this is judged as a gift of a healthy person, meaning that it's simply an unconditional gift, and once he gives this gift, he can't go back. It has the status of regular gift that a healthy person would give. Gemara now elaborates on each opinion. Rav Amar Reikimat Neshchimira, Rav again says that it's judged as a gift of an ill person. It's not a regular gift. It's a gift that has that special status that the Rabbanan gave it, that he can retract, for example. Why does Rav say this? His argument is, Midichsiv ba b'maves, from this language that was written that he said, "I'm giving the gift in death." So says Rav, "Acher misa kamerle." Look, he's saying that it should be a gift in death. He's clearly saying that the gift should only go into effect upon his death, if he dies from his illness. And meaning Rav pays more attention to that language. That, Rav argues, is the primary, more important language here. V'haydechsiv b'chayim. So what was this other language that he said it's a gift in life? No, that's just simen ba'alma d'chayim. He was just expressing a simen that, you know, it mentions that, you know, he's going to die, possibly. So he doesn't want to jinx himself, so to speak. Like the Rishbam says, it's, you know, opens the mouth of the satan. You start mentioning, "Oh, I might die, so now you're attracting the satan, who says, yeah, we can arrange that. So he wants to add this, like, bracha, that in life, that, no, I should live long, you know, hopefully I shouldn't die. But in terms of what the actual kinyan is doing, the way it's structured, it says, Rav, the important language here is the word b'maves. He's clearly saying it's only a gift if I should die. So it's matnas shchiv meira. Therefore, if afterwards he changes his mind, he may do so. Shmuel amar, he can matnas bari. Shmuel says, no. We judge this as the gift of a healthy person. It's a regular old gift. You can't go back afterwards. Why? Midichsiv ba b'chayim. Shmuel says, that's what this language of b'chayim is telling us. Mechayim kamar. The benefactor means to say with that language that the gift should go into effect not only in the event I die from the illness, but from now, while I'm still alive even. Which means then that it's a regular, unconditional matnas bar. What about this language of an in death? Shmuel says, all he's saying with that extra language of an in death is that this gift should be from now and forever. Like in life and in death, the gift should last forever. But in fact, the benefactor is saying it's a gift from today while I'm still alive. Hence, it's a matnas bari, it's a regular old gift, and so if he changes his mind, it's too late. He can't retract afterwards. He already gave the property away. The Gemara rules the halacha on this issue. Amri Nardai, the Nardayan said, Hilchasa kavuse de Rav. The halacha on this issue is like Rav. And so if an ill person issues such an ambiguous document that says, I'm gifting my properties in life and in death, the halacha is we judge that as a matnas shchiv mera, that he means to only give the gift in the event he dies from his illness, and therefore if he recovers, obviously it's not a gift, and if he changes his mind and wants to give it to somebody else, let's say, he may do so as well. The Gemara continues with the statement of Rava on this. Amar Rava. Rava said, V'iksiv ba mechayim. If the language in the document said, from life and in death, there should be a gift, in that case, says Rava Kana. The named recipient would immediately acquire the property, and meaning that would be judged as the gift of a healthy person, that he therefore cannot retract on, and goes into effect regardless of whether he dies from the illness or not. Now, the Gemara at this point does not acknowledge any significant distinction between the language of from life and in death that Rava speaks about versus the language of the case above of in life and in death. The Gemara sees no substantial distinction between those two languages. So basically, Rava sounds like he's saying that the halacha is like Shmuel, and because of the language in the document that mentions from life, we say that's the primary language. He's saying the gift should go into effect right away, even while he's alive. And the Bamavis part, we say, so he's just saying, Kamandiyam Rim Yatav Yad Olam, he's just saying it should work forever. But what he means is the gift should work from today. So Rava appears to rule like Shmuel. The Gemara says, Amar Ameymar, Amar says, Les Hilchazak Avusei de Rava. Says Ameymar, the halacha is not like Rava. Rather, in spite of this language that he mentioned, that the gift should work from life, we pay more attention, we assume the primary part is the language of Bamavis, and so it's judged as a matnas shchiv mera. Amrle Ravashi la meimer. Ravashi asked the meimer, the pshita, why do you even need to mention that the halacha is not like Rav? It's obvious. The ha'omri nardai hilchazak avusei the Rav. The nardai sages already said that the halacha is like Rav and not like Shmuel. And again, the Gemara at this point understands that Rav essentially is saying Shmuel's opinion. He's supporting Shmuel's opinion. So Ravashi says, what's the point of saying, oh, we don't paskin like Rava? Nardai already said that we paskin like Rav, not like Shmuel. The Gemara answers that, in fact, a Meimar is making an important point. For without a Meimar, the Gemara now suggests that you could have made a distinction between the language of the original case, Bechayim, in life and in death, versus the language that Rava refers to of from life and in death. And you could make the argument that although Rav says, by the case of in life and in death, the in death part of it defines the transaction and it's matnas shchiv mera. However, if the language was from life and in death, you could argue that the language of from life is more clearly stating that in terms of the timing of when this gift should go into effect, it should go into effect from life. Meaning right now, so perhaps in this case, Rav agrees that we judge this as a matnas bari, it's a regular old gift, he's giving it today, just as any healthy person would give a gift. And so you can't retract. Kamash Balan. A Meimar therefore teaches us that in fact, there is no distinction between Bechayim and Mechayim. And even if the document stated from life and in death, we still judge that document, that gift, as a matnas shchiv mera. That once again, the benefactor only wants the gift to go into effect after death, and therefore it has that special status of matnas shchiv mera, and so it's not a gift if he recovers, and if he changes his mind, he may do so. The Gemara relates, Ahuda asa l'kameder of Nachman l'hardam, somebody once came with such a document. An ill person wrote a gift saying, in life and in death, he brought this document before Rav Nachman in Narda for a ruling. Now the Gemara said above that we paskin like Rav, that such a document is to be interpreted as a matnas shchiv mera. And so this person, this benefactor who wrote the document, according to halacha, has the right to go back. If he wants to retract now, he may do so. However, Rav Nachman was not comfortable issuing such a ruling for this person. And instead, Shadre l'kameder Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba l'shum tamya. He sent this person who wanted to go back on the gift to Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba, who was in Shum Tamya. He said, go to him and see what he says the halacha is. And Rav Nachman fully expected that Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba would rule according to the halacha that indeed it's judged as a matnas shchiv mera, so the person has a right to retract if he wants. So why didn't Rav Nachman himself just simply issue that ruling? Amar explained, "Zhacha asu de Shmuel." Here in Arda is Shmuel's place. This is the community of Shmuel, and therefore Hechi Navid Kavusei the Rav. How would it be right to publicly issue a ruling against, like, the Mora de Asra, the halachic authority of the community, which was Shmuel? How could I publicly issue a ruling against Shmuel's opinion? Of course, Shmuel's opinion, we learned above, was that we judge the document as a regular matnas bari. We say that, look, he said b'chayim, so it means he's giving the gift today. So this person would not be able to retract. So Rav Nachman didn't want to publicly rule against Shmuel. So therefore he sent him to a different community where presumably Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba would rule in accordance with Rav. And we said above, that's the halacha, that it's judged as a matnas chimra, so the person could retract. Another case, Sahida Asay l'kameh the Rav, a woman who had written such a document. She had written the gift while she was seriously ill, and this time she had specifically used the language of mechayim ubamavis, from life and in death. And later she decided she wanted to retract from the gift. And she came to Rava for a ruling, and we learned above that in Rava's opinion, if the document states from life and in death, then we interpret it as a matnas bari, as a gift of a healthy person that one cannot retract from. And so the Gemara says, Avila Rava Kishmaise. Rava ruled for her in accordance with his opinion that such a document is deemed gift of a healthy person. So he said there, unfortunately, you can't retract from the gift. The Gemara says, Have a kotar delay. She would bother and badger Rava. She wouldn't leave him alone. She says, it's not fair. This is not the right ruling. You ruled against me. It's not fair. She wouldn't accept the ruling. So Gemara says, Amar lei, the Rav Papa Berei, the Rav Chanan Safrei. So Rav at one point told his scribe, Rav Papa, the son of Rav Chanan, Zil Ksovli, okay, fine. He pretended to capitulate to her demand and told his sofer, go and write up a document stating a ruling that she could retract. And he did this just to get rid of her. And so Uksov Ba, he told her papa to also write in the document the words Socher Alein Omaton, the words from the Mishnah and Bab Metzia, that discusses a halacha that if a person's employees backed out of a contract, that then the employer is able, he has the right to pretend he's going to pay them more to ensure that they're going to continue working to meet their commitment. So it says Matan, he can deceive them. So with this, Rav intended that, you know, if she's going to bring this document to a different judge, the judge will see that language and understand that Rava was saying here that I'm not really giving this ruling, it was just a deception. And with this, Rav attempted to get this woman off his case, but apparently this woman was pretty sharp, and she saw through the deception, and this got her even more angry, Amra, and she proceeded to curse Rava. She said, Lit ba'arbe, Rava's ship should sink. Atuye kamatisli. Is he thinking he could trick me over here? Use this deception on me. Gemara says Rava's students were very frightened, and this person cursed Rava. And so immediately, amshinu lemane the Rava b'maya. They wet Rava's clothing in water to try and, like, ward off the effects of the curse, so that, like, the curse was partially fulfilled. So hopefully it shouldn't come to pass. Gemara says, va'afilu hachi lo ifrik mitiva. In spite of their efforts to ward off the curse, Rava was not spared from the curse that his ship should sink, and his ship did sink. And we begin the next Mishnah, which deals with the case of a person who gifted away all of his property, but a question later arose as to whether he, in fact, was a shchimer at the time. Was he seriously ill at the time? And of course, that question impacts whether the gift is a conditional gift. It's only a gift if he dies of the illness. If he recovers, then it's not a gift. The litigants in this case are fighting in court as to whether the benefactor was in fact ill at the time, which determines who now could claim the property. Mishnah says, we're talking about a gift document of Lokasav Ba Shchiv Meira. The document did not include the typical language of a Manas Shchiv Meira document. Normally, such a document would include the words that, you know, this person wrote away all of his properties while he was lying in bed, sick. It didn't contain that language. And later, and we'll see in the Gemara when we learn a Braisa that also talks about this case, the case is that later on he is fine, he's healthy. And the named recipients in the document want to claim his properties. They say, you wrote all your properties to us for coming to take the property. Who Omer, Shchiv Meira Yisi. The benefactor of the gift says, no, because I was a shchimera at the time. I gave this gift as a man of shchimera. I was very ill at the time. Now that I'm all better, the gift is null and void. The recipients in the gift documents claim not true. They say, no, you were healthy at the time. This is a regular old gift. And so the property is ours. Says the first opinion in the Mishnah, Sarech lehevi ra'yesh shchiv me'rahaya. The burden of proof is on the benefactor of the gift document. He must prove that his claim that he was seriously ill at the time, so it was a matter of shchimer. He has to prove that's true. And if he can't, the property is awarded to the recipients named in the document. Divrei Rabbi Meir. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. V'chachamim omrem, v'chachamim say, no, the halacha here is that amotzei mechaveira lavaraya. He who is attempting to take away property from the opposing litigants, meaning the recipients named in the gift document, who are trying to claim this property from the benefactor, the burden of proof is upon them to prove that the benefactor's claim that he was a shchimer at the time is not true. They have to prove that, no, he was healthy at the time, and therefore it was an unconditional gift. Until they can prove that, the benefactor keeps the properties. And the Gemara will go more into exactly what each opinion is saying and the rationale of each opinion. The Gemara begins with a related case. So, matanta ba rami bi'arse. It was once a gift document which did include that standard language of a matnas shchimer. Right? It stated that this person gave the gift when he was sick and lying in bed. However, v'lo kasav ba umigo mare iftar lebeis olame. This document did not also include a language stating that the benefactor indeed succumbed to his illness. He died from that illness that he had when he willed this gift. It didn't say that. So although he did eventually die, this document still had an uncertainty, and that is perhaps this shchimera. Yes, he was seriously ill at the time that he willed the gift to this other person, but perhaps he then recovered, he got better. And then he fell ill again later and died. But since he got better, that event would make the original gift null and void. So perhaps the benefactor's regular yorshim may keep the property on this claim. But the other side, the recipients named in the gift document are claiming that no, it's not true. In all probability, he died from the original illness. So what was the halacha in this case? Turning to Amid Beis, the Gemara says, Amar Rabba. Rabba argues, Hare meis v'hare kivro mochiach alav. The present reality that the benefactor is dead and in the grave should prove the answer. That should indicate what happened here, meaning that the present reality that this benefactor died should lead us to assume that how did he die? Presumably from the original illness, rather than saying that he was originally ill with something, then he got better, and then he got a different illness and died. Says Rabba, we go by Chazaka Dehashta. Right now the status is he died, so presumably his death was a result of the original illness. And therefore, the recipients in the document received the properties. But Abaye questions Rabba's logic. Commonly Abaye says back to Rabba, Hashta Uma Sfina Sheruban Le Aved. If the halacha is regarding a ship that has sunk, where certainly the statistics are that most passengers of that ship have died, and yet the halacha is taught in the Mishnah and Gittin says, is that nosin alein chumrei chayim v'chumrei mesim. The Mishnah tells us we still have to be stringent for the possibility that the people on the ship may have survived. And so, for example, if there's a daughter of a Kohen, of course, as a daughter of a Kohen, she's allowed to eat truma. But she then married a Yisrael, a non-Kohen. And the halacha is when she marries a Yisrael, she may no longer eat truma until the end of the marriage. So let's say this woman's husband was on the ship and the ship sunk. The halacha is she may still not eat truma because maybe her husband is still alive. So Abaye argues that if we still consider the possibility that the person survived in that case, well then cholin, as regards our question here, has to do with sick people, a person who is seriously ill. Where the statistics are shirov cholin l'chaim, most people who get sick get better. So lo kol shekein, is it not the kal v'chomer? Certainly, we should consider that that's what happened here. Yes, this person was seriously ill at the time that he wrote up the gift documents, but since rov cholin l'chaim, most sick people get better, we should say there's a very good chance he got better, and yet eventually he died from something else. And therefore, the Shchemira's family should be able to argue that, you know, who says that this gift went into effect? It's entirely possible that our father got better and then died from something else, and therefore we should not have to recognize this gift and give the property over to you, to these recipients in the gift document. Now, of course, this discussion is related with the case of our Mishnah, which is a very similar discussion, where again, we don't know if the person who wrote the gift document was in fact the Shchimira at the time. He says he was, and therefore since now he's healthy, he doesn't have to uphold this gift. But the other side says, no, you were never ill, and therefore you owe us this gift. The question in our Mishnah's case, and the question here that Rabbi Abaye deal with, it boils down to the same thing, which is, in a case where we're not certain of, you know, what happened here, do we say that, well, if the current status is a certain way, we assume that current status, what is, always was, and there was no change that occurred in the interim. Now, the Gemara does not connect Abaye and Rava directly to our Mishnah. Rather, it brings in a Braisa, which echoes our Mishnah's discussion, because the Braisa is a little more explicit in the case that we're dealing with. That is, Amar Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua, Huna Breid Rav Yeshua said, "Keman ozla ha shmaisa the Rabba." Which Tanaic opinion does Rabba follow here? Kerebi Nasan. Rabba goes like Rabbi Nasan of the following Braisa. The Tanya, the Braisa discusses the same case as our Mishnah, where the fight between the two litigants is whether this benefactor was ill at the time that he gifted away his properties. The benefactor says he was. The other side says, no, you were not. So the Braisa discusses, mi motzi miad mi. Who is considered the motzi, the one taking from the other, who has the burden of proof in this case? So the first opinion of the Braisa says, hu motzi midan below raya. The benefactor, who's claiming he was ill at the time that he authorized this gift, can take the property from them without any proof. He is the presumed owner here. V'hein ein motzi'in miyado ela b'raya. Whereas, the other side, the benefactors named in the gift document cannot extract these properties unless they have proof that, in fact, the benefactor was healthy at the time that he wrote this gift. So this is like the Chachamim of our Mishnah, Divrei Rabbi Yaakov. These are the words of Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Nasan Omer. Rabbi Nasan says that, no, the halacha is, im bariu, if currently the benefactor, this person who does admit that he wrote this document gifting away his properties, if presently the benefactor is healthy, then Allah levi raya shahaya shchiv meira. The burden of proof is upon him, on the benefactor, to prove his claim that, oh, he was a shchiv meira at the time. So therefore, now that he is better, it's not a gift. He has to prove that he was a shchiv meira at the time. Otherwise, we assume that what is, the current status that he is healthy, was, it always was, he was always healthy, we assume. Because obviously it's not a case where the document mentioned that he was ill at the time he gave the gift. Whereas im shchimirahu, if, however, currently the benefactor is seriously ill, then, again, we apply the same principle. We say, okay, what is, was. We go by the present status, we assume that's what always was, and therefore, alehen levi raya shabari haya. In this case, Rabbi Nasa would agree that the burden of proof is on the recipients in the document to prove that, no, previously when you gave the gift, you were not ill, you were healthy at that time. If they can't prove that, then the benefactor keeps the property. So the point is that we see that Rabbi Nasan subscribes to the theory of going by the chazaka de hashta, the present status. If the status right now is that this benefactor in the gift document is perfectly healthy, then we assume that that was the situation previously as well, at the time he wrote this gift. And therefore, we assume this was simply a matnas bari. This was an unconditional gift of a healthy person, and therefore there's no going back. And this was exactly what Rabbi was saying too. Rabbi said that, look, this person has died. We therefore assume that nothing happened in the middle here. He died from what? From the original illness. There was no, like, change in the middle. Of course, unless we know otherwise. So we see that the Rabbi echoes the view of Rabbi Nasan, which is also the view of Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah. Now, the counter argument here is that, very nice that right now, let's say this person is healthy, but there is another factor to consider in this case, which is that the ownership status of these properties, of course, that they belong to this benefactor until the possible gift. So we can argue a different chazakah here, and that is, let's assume that what was is the previously known status that the properties belong to this benefactor. Now you have a question. Maybe he transferred the properties through this gift. Chachamim and Rabbi Yaakov and Nabaye argue over here. At the Chazakah, the previously known status that the properties definitely used to belong to the Shchimira, tells us to assume that that status didn't change and therefore the Shchimira wins. Even if right now he's healthy, he is able to argue in court that at the time of the gift, he was a Shchimira. And now he's better, so the gift is null and void. That is the other position on this question. The Gemara now applies this dispute that we just learned to a different context. Rabbi Elazar said, Ula Toma, as regards a case of an uncertainty of Toma, or somebody became ritually impure, Kimachlokas. We can apply the same dispute that we just learned, this question of whether we're more influenced by the current status of, you know, let's say the person is healthy or that he's dead now, versus going by the previously known status that the money, the properties used to certainly belong to this benefactor. He says, this question of whether going by the current status or the previous status can be applied in the following case. It's not. We learn in the Mishnah in Taharis, the Mishnah says, as far as a bikka, bikka means a valley, and here specifically it refers to an enclosed valley with grain fields in it. Meaning there are mechitzos, there are partitions, valid halachic partitions going around the perimeter of the grain fields. Says the Mishnah in Taharis, bimos achama, during the summertime when the farmers are in this valley, they're in the fields, harvesting the fields, so people frequent this bikka. The status of the bikka is as follows, Rishus HaYachid L'Shabbos, this enclosed valley is considered a Rishus HaYachid, a private domain with respect to the halachas of Shabbos. So that if somebody carries from this domain to the public domain, picks something up from, you know, one domain, puts it down in the other, that he has violated a malacha, Shabbos of Votzah, that's an act of carrying. For one way to violate this malacha Votzah is exactly that, to carry from one type of domain to another. The Mishnah is saying that the definition of Rosh Hashanah Yachid for the laws of Shabbos is defined as an area that is enclosed by mechitzos. The fact that, you know, many people frequent the area, the domain in question, does not cause it to lose its status of Rosh Hashanah Yachid. It's still a Rosh Hashanah Yachid because it's completely enclosed by partitions. But since people do frequent this bikka, Rishus HaRabim L'Tumma, with regards to the rules of Tumma, ritual impurity, this valley is considered a Rishus HaRabim. And this refers to that we have different rules by cases of questionable Tumma. We're not sure if somebody contracted ritual impurity, like maybe he touched that sheretz, some source of Tumma, something that would make him Tumme. We learn from the passage of Visota, actually, a woman who may have possibly defiled herself, like also a kind of tumma, meaning she may have committed adultery, and certainly if she did, she becomes prohibited to her husband. But the case in the Torah is, we're not sure at this point what happened. The Torah says that if this question came up, and she was in seclusion with the suspected man, then we presume that she's tummy. Until we figure out otherwise, the woman is presumed to have become defiled. So this teaches us the principle of Safik Vadai, that with regards to the question of tummy here, if we're not sure, we presume the worst, we are stringent, we assume that she was defiled, and therefore, practically, she, at this point, is prohibited to her husband. In this case, the Torah serves as a model, as a general rule, that when a question of tumma comes up in a similar kind of situation to Sota, it happened in a private domain, there's nobody around, that's the sense of private domain in this context, and the Torah says, if that question of tumma, like maybe I touched the sheretz, happened in a private domain, we presume the person became tumme. And by inference we learn that if, however, the question of tumma occurred in a public domain, and there's a presumption that the person did not become tumme. Safik Tumma versus Rabim, a question of Tumma that happened in the public domain. Tahar, we assume, it's Tahar, nothing happened, we assume that the person did not become ritually impure. So the Mishnah says, this valley that during the summer season is frequented by people is, regarding the laws of Tumma, deemed a public domain. So if a question of Tumma came up at that time, the presumption would be the person did not become Tumma. However, being Mosek Shamim, when the rainy season, the winter season comes, when nobody enters the field, the crops are growing, nobody's going to enter there and damage the crops, the halacha is, Rishus HaYachid L'Kan L'Kan. The bikkah is then considered a private domain even with respect to the laws of tumah, because practically speaking, nobody goes there. That's the criterion when it comes to defining something as the rishus hayachid for tumah. So even for tumah, it's rishus hayachid. So if a question of tumah happened in this bikkah during the rainy season, during the winter, we would presume the person became tumah. The Gemara is saying that we could apply the dispute we learned between Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Nassan to a case involving this case of bikkah that the Mishnah in Taharas discusses. That is, let's say somebody had a question of tumah. He might have become tumah, but he does not know. He can't remember whether this event, the question of tumah, happened during the summer or the winter. The halacha in such a case would depend on the dispute we learned between Rabbi Nassan and Rabbi Yaakov. That is, Rabbi Nassan would say that we go by the current status. That is, if the person asked the question, and right now it's the summertime, when the bikkah is considered rishus harabim, the answer would be that the person is presumed to be pure, he's not tameh. Because we assume that the status of when the event occurred was the same status as now, which is that it's summertime. So in summertime it's considered rishus harabim. So we apply the rule that a question of tumah and rishus harabim, the halacha is, the presumption is, they did not become tameh. Whereas according to Rabbi Yaakov, we focus on the previously known status, which is that, of course, before this whole question came up, this person presumably was tar, he was not tameh. So now we have a question whether he entered into a situation where we're going to have to be stringent to presume that he became tameh. Ultimately, what that is a question of maybe this person who was tahar became tameh. So Rabbi Yaakov's view is, as we said above, that we go by the principle of what was is. We assume, if you're not sure, then we assume the previous status didn't change. So Rabbi Yaakov would rule in this case that the person is tar. He didn't become tameh. Whereas again, according to Rabbi Nassan, if the person came to us and asked the question in the winter, when this, because the status of Rosh Hashanah Yachid, Rabbi Nassan would say that, no, we have to assume the event occurred while this place was a Rosh Hashanah Yachid, and therefore we apply the rule that a question of tumah and Rosh Hashanah Yachid, we assume, is tameh. So they would disagree in this case about the halacha. If he came to us asking the question in the winter, when presently this place is Rosh Hashanah Yachid, what's the halacha? Rabbi Yaakov says, since before this whole case he was tar, we assume he's still tar. Rabbi Nassan says that since right now he's asking when it's a Rosh Hashanah Yachid, we assume the case happened, the event occurred in Rosh Hashanah Yachid, and so we apply the rule Safek Tumah, Rosh Hashanah Yachid Tameh, so we rule this person is Tameh. The Gemara adds a point about this halacha the Mishnah Taharas taught us. Mishnah Taharas said that during the summer, when people do frequent, the farmers do go in the valley, there's people there, therefore it's defined as a Rosh Hashanah Rabim with respect to the laws of Tumah. However, Amar Rav, Rav said, Lo Shonu, they only taught this Allah, Shalom Avra Lev Yimosa Geshamim. This ruling that it could be, you know, in the summer, it could be deemed a public domain for Tumah, is only if this enclosed field has not existed for a winter season. Well, Avra Lev Yimosa Geshamim, once one winter went by with this enclosed field, the Allah is Rosh Hashayach Lekan Lekan. From now on, this enclosed valley will be considered a private domain, both with respect to the laws of Shabbos and the laws of Tumah. Even when the summer comes around again, that will not change the status. Once it got a status of a private domain for Tumah, because it went through a winter, now it will permanently remain a private domain. So if a question of Tumah happened there, we would rule stringently, would presume that the person did become Tumah.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.